The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. Continued. Disc 3. How he smuggled the weapon up to the rock, or managed to liberate it later, I don't know. But Prof's shooting joined with Shorty's work to turn tables. Not one yellow jacket got out alive. Several people were burned, and 4 were killed. But knives, hands, and heels finished it in seconds. Perhaps I should say, all but one, Prof went on. 2 Cossacks at the door through which you departed had been given quietus by our brave comrade Shorty McCrum, and I am sorry to say that Shorty was lying across them, dying. We knew. So, dulce et decorum. 1 guard in that doorway had a damaged face but was still moving. I gave his neck a treatment known in professional circles Earthside as the Istanbul Twist. He joined his mates. By then most of the living had left. Just myself, our chairman of the evening, Finn Nielsen, a comrade known as Mom, that being what her husbands called her. I consulted with Comrade Finn, and we bolted all doors. That left a cleaning job. Do you know the arrangements backstage there?
Not me, I said.
Wyo shook head. There is a kitchen and pantry, used for banquets. I suspect that Mom and family run a butcher shop, for they disposed of bodies as fast as Finn and I carried them back, their speed limited only by the rate at which portions could be ground up and flushed into the city's cloaca. The sight made me quite faint. So I spent time mopping in the hall. Clothing was the difficult part, especially those quasi-military uniforms.
What did you do with those laser guns?
Prof turned bland eyes on me.
Guns? Dear me, they must have disappeared. We removed everything of a personal nature from bodies of our departed comrades, for relatives, for identification, for sentiment.
Eventually, we had everything tidy. Not a job that would fool Interpol, but one as to make it seem unlikely that anything untoward had taken place. We conferred, agreed that it would be well not to be seen soon, and left severally, myself by a pressure door above the stage leading up to level 6. Thereafter I tried to call you, Manuel, being worried about your safety and that of this dear lady.
Prof bowed to Wyo.
That completes the tale. I spent the night in quiet places.
Prof, I said, those guards were new chums, still getting their legs, or we wouldn't have won.
That could be, he agreed, but had they not been, the outcome would have been the same.
How so? They were armed.
Lad, have you ever seen a boxer dog? Oh, I think not. No dogs that large in Luna. The boxer is a result of special selection. Gentle and intelligent, he turns instantly into deadly killer when occasion requires. Here has been bred an even more curious creature. I know of no city on Terra with as high standards of good manners and consideration for one's fellow man as here in Luna. By comparison, Terran cities, I have known most major ones, are barbaric. Yet the loony is as deadly as the boxer dog. Manuel, 9 guards, no matter how armed, stood no chance against that pack. Our patron used bad judgment.
Seen the morning paper, Prof? Or a video cast?
The latter, yes.
Nothing in late news last night.
Nor this morning.
Odd, I said.
What's odd about it? Asked Wyo. We won't talk, and we have comrades in key places in every paper in Luna.
Prof shook his head. No, my dear. Not that simple.
Censorship. Do you know how copy is set in our newspapers?
Not exactly. It's done by machinery.
Here's what Prof means, I told her. News is typed in editorial offices. From there on, it's a list service directed by a master computer at Authority Complex.
Hopes she would notice master computer rather than Mike,
Copy prints out there via phone circuit. These rolls feed into a computer section which reads, sets copy, and prints out newspapers at several locations. Novilin edition of Daily Lunatic prints out in Novilin changes in ads and local stories. And computer makes changes from standard symbols. Doesn't have to be told how. What prof means is that at printout, at authority complex, warden could intervene. Same for all news services. Both off and to Luna. They funnel through computer room. The point is, prof went on, the warden could have killed the story. It's irrelevant whether he did. Or, check me, Manuel, you know I'm hazy about machinery. He could insert a story, too, no matter how many comrades we have in newspaper offices.
Sure, I agreed. At complex, anything can be added, cut, or changed.
And that, Signorita, is the weakness of our cause. Communications. Those goons were not important. But crucially important is that it lay with the warden, not with us, to decide whether the story should be told. To a revolutionist, communications are sine qua non.
Weil looked at me, and I could see synapses snapping. So I changed subject.
Prof, why get rid of bodies? Besides, horrible job was dangerous.
Don't know how many bodyguards Warden has, but more could show up while you were doing it.
Believe me, lad, we feared that. But although I was almost useless, it was my idea. I had to convince the others. Oh, not my original idea, but remembrance of things past. An historical principle.
What principle?
Terror. A man can face known danger, but the unknown frightens him. We disposed of those finks, teeth and toenails, to strike terror into their mates. Nor do I know how many effectives the warden has. But I guarantee they are less effective today. Their mates went out on an easy mission. Nothing came back.
Wael shivered.
It scares me, too. They won't be anxious to go inside a warren again. But, Professor, you say you don't know how many bodyguards the warden keeps. The organization knows. 27. If 9 were killed, only 18 are left. Perhaps it's time for a putsch. No?
No, I answered.
Why not, Manny? They'll never be weaker.
Not weak enough. Killed 9 because they were crackers to walk in where we were. But if Warden stays home with guards around him, well, had enough shoulder-to-shoulder noise last night. I turned to Prof. But still I'm interested in fact, if it is, that Warden now has only 18. You said Wyo should not go to Hong Kong, and I should not go home. But if he has only 18 left, I wonder how much danger. Later, after he gets reinforcements, but now, well, El Cid has 4 main exits, plus many little ones. How many can they guard? What's to keep Wyo from walking to Tube West, getting Pisut, going home?
She might, Prof agreed.
I think I must, Wyo said. I can't stay here forever. If I have to hide, I can do better in Hong Kong, where I know people.
You might get away with it, my dear. I doubt it. There were 2 yellow jackets at Tube Station West last night. I saw them. They may not be there now. Let's assume they are not. You go to the station, disguised, perhaps. You get your pea suit and take a capsule to Beluthahatchee. As you climb out to take the bus to Ennsville, you're arrested. Communications. No need to post a yellow jacket at the station. It is enough that someone sees you there. A phone call does the rest.
But you assumed that I was disguised.
Your height cannot be disguised, and your pressure suit would be watched by someone not suspected of any connection to the warden. Most probably a comrade.
Prof dimpled.
The trouble with conspiracies is that they rot internally. When the number is as high as 4, chances are even that 1 is a spy.
Wael said gloomily,
you make it sound hopeless.
Not at all, my dear. 1 chance in 1,000, perhaps.
I can't believe it. I don't believe it. Why, in the years I've been active, we have gained members by the hundreds. We have organizations in all major cities. We have the people with us.
Prof shook head. Every new member made it that much more likely that you would be betrayed. Wyoming, dear lady, revolutions are not won by enlisting the masses. Revolution is a science only a few are competent to practice. It depends on correct organization, and above all, on communications. Then, at the proper moment in history, they strike. Correctly organized and properly timed, it is a bloodless coup. Done clumsily or prematurely, and the result is civil war, mob violence, purges, terror. I hope you will forgive me if I say that. Up to now, it has been done clumsily.
Wyall looked baffled. What do you mean by correct organization?
Functional organization. How does one design an electric motor? Would you attach a bathtub to it, simply because one was available? Would a bouquet of flowers help? A heap of rocks? No. You would use just those elements necessary to its purpose, and make it no larger than needed. And you would incorporate safety factors. Function controls design. So it is with revolution. Organization must be no larger than necessary. Never recruit anyone merely because he wants to join, nor seek to persuade for the pleasure of having another share your views. He'll share them when the time comes, or you've misjudged the moment in history. Oh, there will be an educational organization, but it must be separate. Agitprop is no part of basic structure. As to basic structure, a revolution starts as a conspiracy. Therefore, structure is small, secret, and organized as to minimize damage by betrayal, since there always are betrayals. One solution is the cell system, and so far nothing better has been invented. Much theorizing has gone into optimum cell size. I think that history shows that a cell of three is best. More than three can't agree on when to have dinner, much less when to strike. Manuel, you belong to a large family. Do you vote on when to have dinner?
Bog, no. Man decides.
Ah. Prof took a pad from his pouch, began to sketch. Here is a cells of three tree. If I were planning to take over Luna, I would start with us three. One would be opted as chairman. We wouldn't vote. Choice would be obvious. Or we aren't the right three. We would know the next nine people, three cells, but each cell would only know one of us.
Looks like computer diagram, a ternary logic.
Does it really?
At the next level, there are two ways of linking. This comrade, second level, knows his cell leader, his two cellmates, and on the third level, he knows the three in his subcell. He may or may not know his cellmate's subcells. One method doubles security. The other doubles speed of repair if security is penetrated. Let's say he does not know his cellmate's subcells. Manuel, how many can he betray? Don't say he won't. Today they can brainwash any person, and starch and iron and use him. How many?
Six, I answered. His boss, two cellmates, three in subcell.
Seven, Prof corrected. He betrays himself, too. Which leaves seven broken links on three levels to repair. How?
I don't see how it can be, objected Lyle. You've got them so split up it falls to pieces.
Manuel, an exercise for the student?
Well, blocks down here have to have way to send message up three levels. Don't have to know who, just have to know where.
Precisely.
But, Prof, I went on, there's a better way to rig it.
Really?
Many revolutionary theorists have hammered this out, Manuel.
I have such confidence in them that I'll offer you a wager. At, say, 10 to 1?
Ought to take your money.
Take same cells. Arrange an open pyramid of tetrahedrons, where verticals are in common, Each block knows one in adjoining cell. Knows how to send message to him. That's all he needs. Communication never break down because they run sideways as well as up and down. Something like a neural net. It's why you can knock a hole in a man's head, take chunk of brain out, and not damage thinking much. Excess capacity. Messages shunt around. He loses what was destroyed but goes on functioning.
Manuel, Prof said doubtfully, could you draw a picture? It sounds good, but it's so contrary to orthodox doctrine that I need to see it.
Well, could do better with stereo drafting machine. I'll try. Anybody who thinks it's easy to sketch 121 tetrahedrons, a 5-level open pyramid, clear enough to show relationships, is invited to try.
Presently, I said, look at base sketch. Each vertex of each triangle shares self with 0, 1, or 2 other triangles.
Where shares one, that's its link. One direction, or both. But one is enough for multiply redundant communication net. On corners, where sharing is 0, it jumps to right to next corner. Where sharing is double, choice is again right-handed. Now work it with people. Take level 4, D for dog. This vertex is Comrade Dan. No, let's go down one to show 3 levels of communication knocked out. Level E for easy. Comrade Egbert. Egbert works under Donald. Has cellmates Edward and Elmer. And has 3 under him. Frank, Fred, and Fatso. But knows how to send message to Ezra on his own level, but not in his cell. He does not know Ezra's name, face, address, or anything, but has a way, phone number probably, to reach Ezra in emergency. Now watch it work. Casimir, level 3, finks out and betrays Charlie and Cox in his cell. Baker above him, and Donald, Dan, and Dick in subcell, which isolates Egbert, Edward, and Elmer, and everybody under them. All 3 report in. Redundancy. Necessary to any communication system. But follow Egbert's yell for help. He calls Ezra, but Ezra is under Charlie and is isolated too. No matter. Ezra relays both messages through his safety link, Edmund. By bad luck, Edmund is under Cox, so he also passes it laterally, through Enright. And that gets it past burned out part. And it goes up through Dover, Chambers, and Beeswax, to Adam, front office, who replies down other side of pyramid, with lateral pass on E for easy level, from Esther to Egbert, and on to Ezra and Edmund. These 2 messages, up and down, not only get through at once, but in way they get through. They define to home office exactly how much damage has been done and where. Organization not only keeps functioning, but starts repairing itself at once. Lyo was tracing out lines, convincing herself it would work. Which it would, was idiot circuit. Let Mike study a few milliseconds, and could produce a better, safer, more foolproof hookup. And probably, certainly, ways to avoid betrayal while speeding up routings. But I'm not a computer. Prof was staring with blank expression. What's trouble? I said, it'll work. This is my pigeon. Manuel, excuse me, Senor O'Kelly, will you head this revolution?
Me?
Great bug, nyet. I'm no lost cause martyr. Just talking about circuits.
Wyo looked up. Manny, she said soberly, you're opted. It's settled.
6. Did like hell settle it. Prof said, Manuel, don't be hasty. Here we are. 3. The perfect number. With a variety of talents and experience. Beauty. Age. A mature male drive.
I don't have any drive.
Please, Manuel. Let us think in the widest terms before attempting decisions.
And to facilitate such, may I ask if this hostel stocks potables? I have a few florins I could put into the stream of trade.
Was most sensible word heard in an hour. Still Ignaya Vodka?
Sound choice. He reached for pouch.
Tell it to Bear,
I said, and ordered a liter plus ice.
It came down. Was tomato juice from breakfast.
Now, I said, after we toasted. Prof, what do you think of Penn and Rice? Got money says Yankees can't do it again? Manuel, what is your political philosophy?
With that new boy from Milwaukee, I feel like investing.
Sometimes a man doesn't have to define it, but under Socratic inquiry, knows where he stands and why.
I'll back him against Field, 3-2.
What? You young idiot. How much?
300. Hong Kong.
Done. For example, under what circumstances may the state justly place its welfare above that of a citizen?
Manny, Lyo asked, do you have any more foolish money?
I think well of the Phillies.
I looked her over. Just what were you thinking of betting?
You go to hell, rapist.
Prof, as I see, are no circumstances under which state is justified in placing its welfare ahead of mine.
Good. We have a starting point.
Manny, said Wyo, that's a most self-centered evaluation.
I'm a most self-centered person.
Oh, nonsense. Who rescued me? Me, a stranger. I didn't try to exploit it. Professor, I was cracking, not facking. Manny was a perfect knight.
Sans pareil, sans reproche.
I knew. I've known him for years, which is not inconsistent with the evaluation he expressed. Oh, but it is. Not the way things are, but under the ideal toward which we aim. Manny, the state is Luna. Even though not sovereign yet, we hold citizenships elsewhere. But I am part of the Luna state, and so is your family. Would you die for your family?
Two questions not related.
Oh, but they are. That's the point.
Yet, I know my family. Opted long ago.
Dear lady, I must come to Manuel's defense. He has a correct evaluation, even though he may not be able to state it. May I ask this? Under what circumstances is it moral for a group to do that which is not moral for a member of that group to do alone? That's a trick question.
It is the key question, dear Wyoming. A radical question that strikes to the root of the whole dilemma of government.
Anyone who answers honestly and abides by all consequences knows where he stands and what he will die for.
Wyo frowned.
Not moral for a member of the group?
She said.
Professor, what are your political principles?
May I first ask yours, if you can state them?
Huh, certainly I can. I'm a fifth internationalist. Most of the organization is. Oh, we don't rule out anyone going our way. It's a united front. We have communists and fourths and readyites and societeans and single taxers and you name it. But I'm no Marxist. We fifths have a practical program. Private, where private belongs. Public, where it's needed. And an admission that circumstances alter cases. Nothing doctrinaire.
Capital punishment?
For what?
Let's say for treason, against Luna after you freed Luna.
Treason how? Unless I knew the circumstances, I could not decide.
Nor could I, dear Wyoming. But I believe in capital punishment under some circumstances, with this difference. I would not ask a court. I would try, condemn, execute sentence myself, and accept full responsibility.
But, Professor, what are your political beliefs?
I'm a rational anarchist.
I don't know that brand. Anarchist individualist, anarchist communist, Christian anarchist, philosophical anarchist, syndicalist, libertarian, Those I know. But what's this? Randite?
I can get along with a Randite. A rational anarchist believes that concepts such as state and society and government have no existence save as physically exemplified in the acts of self-responsible individuals. He believes that it is impossible to shift blame, share blame, distribute blame, as blame, guilt, responsibility are matters taking place inside human beings singly, and nowhere else. But being rational, he knows that not all individuals hold his evaluations. So he tries to live perfectly in an imperfect world, aware that his effort will be less than perfect, yet undismayed by self-knowledge of self-failure.
"Hear, hear," I said. "Less than perfect, what I've been aiming for all my life."
"You've achieved it," said Wyo. "Professor, your words sound good, but there is something slippery about them. Too much power in the hands of individuals. Surely you would not want, well, H-missiles, for example, to be controlled by one irresponsible person."
"My point is that one person is responsible. Always. If H-bombs exist, and they do, some man controls them. In terms of morals, there is no such thing as state. Just men. Individuals. Each responsible for his own acts."
"Anybody need a refill?" I asked.
"Nothing uses up alcohol faster than political argument." I sent for another bottle. I did not take part. I was not dissatisfied back when we were ground under iron heel of authority. I cheated authority, and the rest of time didn't think about it. Didn't think about getting rid of authority. Impossible. Go on way, mind own business, not be bothered. True, didn't have luxuries then. By Earthside standards, we were poor. If had to be imported, mostly did without. Don't think there was a powered door in all Luna. Even pea suits used to be fetched up from Terra, until a smart Chinee, before I was born, figured out to make monkey copies better and simpler. Could dump 2 Chinee down in one of our Maria, and they would get rich selling rocks to each other while raising 12 kids. Then a Hindu would sell retail stuff he got from them wholesale, below cost at fat profit. We got along. I had seen those luxuries Earthside. Wasn't worth what they put up with. Don't mean heavy gravity. That doesn't bother me. I mean nonsense. All time, Kokui Moa. If chicken guano on one earthworm city was shipped to Luna, fertilizer problem would be solved for century. Do this. Don't do that. Stay back of line. Where's tax receipt? Fill out form. Let's see license. Submit 6 copies. Exit only. No left turn. No right turn. Queue up to pay fine. Take back and get stamped. Drop dead. But first, get permit. Wyo plowed doggedly into Proof, certain she had all answers. But Proof was interested in questions rather than answers, which baffled her. Finally she said,
"Professor, I can't understand you. I don't insist that you call it government. I just want you to state what rules you think are necessary to ensure equal freedom for all."
"Dear lady, I'll happily accept your rules."
"But you don't seem to want any rules."
"True. But I will accept any rules that you feel necessary to your freedom. I am free, no matter what rules surround me. If I find them tolerable, I tolerate them. If I find them too obnoxious, I break them. I am free because I know that I alone am morally responsible for everything I do."
"You would not abide by a law that the majority felt was necessary?"
"Tell me what law, dear lady, and I will tell you whether I will obey it."
"You wiggled out. Every time I state a general principle, you wiggle out."
Prof clasped hands on chest. "Forgive me. Believe me, lovely Wyoming, I am most anxious to please you. You spoke of willingness to unite the front with anyone going your way. Is it enough that I want to see the authority thrown off Luna and would die to serve that end?"
Wyo beamed.
"It certainly is."
She fisted his ribs, gently, then put arm around him and kissed cheek.
Comrade, let's get on with it.
Cheers, I said. Let's Finn Warden and eliminate him. Seemed a good idea. I'd had the short night and don't usually drink much.
Prof topped our glasses,
held his high and announced with great dignity, Comrades, we declare the revolution. That got us both kissed, but sobered me as Prof sat down and said, The Emergency Committee of Free Luna is in session. We must plan action. I said, Wait, Prof. I didn't agree to anything. What's this action stuff?
We will now overthrow the authority, he said blandly.
How? Going to throw rocks at him?
That remains to be worked out. This is the planning stage.
I said, Prof, you know me. If kicking an authority was a thing we could buy, I wouldn't worry about price.
Our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Huh?
A price that was once paid.
Well, I'd go that high. But when I bet I want the chance to win. Told Wyo last night, I don't object to long odds.
1 in 10 is what you said, Manny.
Duh, Wyo. Show me those odds, I'll tap putt. But can you?
No, Manuel, I can't.
Then why we talk? I can't see any chance.
Nor I, Manuel, but we approach it differently. Revolution is an art that I pursue rather than the goal I expect to achieve. Nor is this a source of dismay. A lost cause can be as spiritually satisfying as a victory.
Not me. Sorry.
Manny, Wyo said suddenly, ask Mike.
I stared. You serious?
Quite serious. If anyone can figure out odds, Mike should be able to, don't you think?
Possible.
Who, if I may ask, Prof put in, is Mike?
I shrugged. Oh, just a nobody.
Mike is Manny's best friend. He's very good at figuring odds.
A bookie? My dear, if we bring in a fourth party, we start by violating the cell principle.
I don't see why, Wyo answered. Mike could be a member of the cell Manny will head.
True. I withdraw objection. Is he safe? You vouch for him? Or you, Manuel? I said, he's dishonest, immature, practical joker, not interested in politics.
Manny, I'm going to tell Mike you said that. Professor, he's nothing of the sort, and we need him. In fact, he might be our chairman, and we three the cell under him, the executive cell.
Wyo, you getting enough oxygen?
I'm okay. I haven't been guzzling it the way you have. Think, Manny. Use imagination.
I must confess, said Prof, that I find these conflicting reports very conflicting.
Manny?
Oh, hell. So, we told him, between us, all about Mike. How he woke up, got his name, met Wyo.
Prof accepted idea of a self-aware computer easier than I accepted idea of snow first time I saw.
Prof just nodded and said, Go on. But presently he said, This is the warden's own computer. Why not invite the warden to our meetings and be done with it?
We tried to reassure him. At last I said, Put it this way. Mike is his own boy, just as you are. Call him rational anarchist, for he's rational and he feels no loyalty to any government. If this machine is not loyal to its owners, why expect it to be loyal to you? A feeling. I treat Mike as well as I know how. He treats me the same way. I told how Mike had taken precautions to protect me. I'm not sure he could betray me to anyone who didn't have those signals. One to secure phone, other to retrieve what I've talked about or stored with him. Machines don't think way people do. But feel dead sure he wouldn't want to betray me. And probably could protect me even if somebody got those signals.
Manny, suggested the Y.O., why not call him? Once Professor De La Paz talks to him, he will know why we trust Mike.
Professor, we don't have to tell Mike any secrets until you feel sure of him.
I see no harm in that. Matter of fact, I admitted, already told him some secrets. I told him about recording last night's meeting and how I stored it.
Prof was distressed. Lyo was worried. I said, damp it?
Nobody but me knows retrieval signal. Why, you know how Mike behaved about your pictures. Wouldn't let me have those pictures, even though I suggested lock on them. But if you two will stop oscillating, I'll call him, make sure that nobody has retrieved that recording, and tell him to erase. Then it's gone forever. Computer memory is all or nothing. Or can go one better. Call Mike and have him play record back into a recorder. Wiping storage. No ho-ho.
Don't bother, said Wyo. Professor, I trust Mike, and so will you.
On second thought, Prof admitted, I see little hazard from a recording of last night's meeting. One that large always contains spies, and one of them may have used a recorder as you did, Manuel. I was upset at what appeared to be your indiscretion. Weakness a member of a conspiracy must never have, especially one at the top, as you are.
Was not member of conspiracy when I fed that recording into Mike, and not now unless somebody quotes odds better than those so far.
I retract. You were not indiscreet. But are you seriously suggesting that this machine can predict the outcome of a revolution?
Don't know.
I think he can, said Wyo.
Hold it, Wyo. Prof, he could predict it, fed all significant data.
That's my point, Manuel. I do not doubt that this machine can solve problems I cannot grasp, but one of this scope. It would have to know, oh goodness, all of human history. All details of the entire social, political, and economic situation on Terra today, and the same for Luna? A wide knowledge of psychology, in all its ramifications? A wider knowledge of technology with all its possibilities? Weaponry, communications, strategy and tactics, agitprop techniques, classic authorities such as Clausewitz, Guevara, Morgenstern, Machiavelli, many others.
Is that all?
Is that all, my dear boy?
Prof, how many history books have you read?
I don't know. In excess of 1,000.
Mike can zip through that many this afternoon, speed limited only by scanning method. He can store data much faster. Soon, minutes, he would have every fact correlated with everything else he knows. Discrepancies noted. Probability values assigned to uncertainties?
Prof, Mike reads every word of every newspaper up from Terra, reads all technical publications, reads fiction, knows it's fiction, because isn't enough to keep him busy, and is always hungry for more. If is any book he should read to solve this, say so. He can cram it down fast as I get it to him.
Prof blinked.
I stand corrected. Very well. Let us see if he can cope with it. I still think there is something known as intuition and human judgment.
Mike has intuition, Wyo said. Feminine intuition, that is.
As for human judgment, I added, Mike isn't human, but all he knows he got from humans. Let's get you acquainted, and you judge his judgment.
So I phoned.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, man, my only male friend. Greetings. Wyo, my only female friend. I heard a third person. I conjecture that it may be Professor Bernardo de la Paz.
Prof looked startled, then delighted. I said, too right, Mike. That's why I called you. Professor is not stupid.
Thank you, man. Professor Bernardo de la Paz, I am delighted to meet you.
I am delighted to meet you too, sir. Prof hesitated, went on. My, Senor Holmes, may I ask how you knew that I was here?
I am sorry, sir, I cannot answer. Man, you know my methods.
Mike is being crafty, Prof. It involves something he learned doing a confidential job for me. So he threw me a hint to let you think that he had identified you by hearing your presence, and he can indeed tell much from respiration and heartbeat, mass, approximate age, sex, and quite a bit about health. Mike's medical storage is as full as any other.
I am happy to say, Mike added seriously, that I detect no signs of cardiac or respiratory trouble, unusual for a man of the professor's age who has spent so many years earthside. I congratulate you, sir.
Thank you, Senor Holmes.
My pleasure, Professor Bernardo de la Paz.
Once he knew your identity, he knew how old you are. When you were shipped, and what for. Anything that ever appeared about you in Lunatic or Moonglow or any lunar publication, including pictures. Your bank balance, whether you pay bills on time, and much more. Mike retrieved this in a split second once he had your name. What he didn't tell, because was my business, is that he knew I had invited you here. So it's a short jump to guess that you're still here when he heard heartbeat and breathing that matched you. Mike, no need to say Professor Bernardo de la Paz each time. Professor or Prof is enough.
Noted, man. But he addressed me formally, with honorific.
So both of you relax. Prof, you scan it? Mike knows much, doesn't tell all, knows when to keep mouth shut.
I am impressed.
Mike is a fair dinkum thinkum, you'll see. Mike, I bet Professor 3-2 that Yankees would win pennant again. How chances?
I am sorry to hear it, man. The correct odds, this early in the year and based on past performances of teams and players, are 1-4.72 the other way.
Can't be that bad.
I'm sorry, man. I will print out the calculations if you wish, but I recommend that you buy back your wager. The Yankees have a favorable chance to defeat any single team, but the combined chances of defeating all teams in the league, including such factors as weather, accidents, and other variables for the season ahead, place the club on the short end of the odds I gave you.
Prof, want to sell that bet?
Certainly, Manuel.
Price?
$300 Hong Kong.
You old thief.
Manuel, as your former teacher, I would be false to you if I did not permit you to learn from mistakes. Senor Holmes, Mike, my friend, may I call you friend?
Please do.
Mike almost purred.
Mike, amigo, do you also tout horse races?
I often calculate odds on horse races. The civil service computer men frequently program such requests. But the results are so at variance with expectations that I have concluded either that the data are too meager, or the horses or riders are not honest. Possibly all three. However, I can give you a formula which will pay a steady return if played consistently.
Prof looked eager.
What is it, may one ask?
One may. Bet the leading apprentice jockey to place. He is always given good mounts, and they carry less weight. But don't bet him on the nose.
Leading apprentice.
Manuel, do you have the correct time?
Prof, which do you want? Get a bet down before post time, or settle what we set out to?
Sorry. Please carry on.
Leading apprentice.
Mike, I gave you a recording last night. I leaned close to pickups and whispered,
Bastille Day.
Retrieved, man.
Thought about it?
In many ways. Y.O., you speak most dramatically. Thank you, Mike.
Prof, can you get your mind off ponies?
Huh?
Certainly. I am all ears.
Then quit doing odds under your breath. Mike can do them faster.
I was not wasting time. The financing of joint ventures such as ours is always difficult. However, I shall table it. I am all attention.
I want Mike to do a trial projection.
Mike, in that recording, you heard Wyo say we had to have free trade with Terra. You heard Prof say we should clamp an embargo on shipping food to Terra. Who's right?
Your question is indeterminate, man.
What did they leave out?
Shall I rephrase it, man?
Sure. Give us discussion.
In immediate terms, Wyo's proposal would be of great advantage to the people of Luna. The price of foodstuffs at Catapult Head would increase by a factor of at least 4. This takes into account a slight rise in wholesale prices on Terra. Slight, because the authority now sells at approximately the free market price. This disregards subsidized, dumped, and donated foodstuffs, most of which come from the large profit caused by the controlled low price at Catapult Head. I will say no more about minor variables, as they are swallowed by major ones. Let it stand that the immediate effect here would be a price increase on the close order of 4-fold.
Hear that, Professor?
Please, dear lady, I never disputed it.
The profit increase to the grower is more than 4-fold because, as Wyo pointed out, he must now buy water and other items at controlled, high prices. Assuming a free market throughout the sequence, his profit enhancement will be of the close order of 6-fold. But this would be offset by another factor. Higher prices for exports would cause higher prices for everything consumed in Luna, goods and labor. The total effect would be an enhanced standard of living for all on the close order of 2-fold. This would be accompanied by vigorous effort to drill and seal more farming tunnels, mine more ice, improve growing methods, all leading to greater export. However, the Terran market is so large and food shortage so chronic that reduction in profit from increase of export is not a major factor.
Prof said, But, Signor Mike, that would only hasten the day that Luna is exhausted.
The projection was specified as immediate, Signor Professor. Shall I continue in longer range on the basis of your remarks?
By all means.
Luna's mass to 3 significant figures is 7.36 × 10⁻⁹ tons. Plus, holding other variables constant, including lunar and Terran populations, the present differential rate of export in tons could continue for 7.36 × 10⁻¹⁰ years, before using up 1% of Luna. Round it as 7,000 billion years.
What? Are you sure?
You are invited to check, Professor.
I said, Mike, this is a joke? If so, not funny even once.
It is not a joke, man.
Anyhow, Prof added, recovering, it's not Luna's crust we are shipping. It's our lifeblood, water and organic matter, not rock.
I took that into consideration, Professor. This projection is based on controlled transmutation. Any isotope into any other, and postulating power for any reaction not exo-energetic. Rock would be shipped, transformed into wheat and beef and other foodstuffs.
But we don't know how to do that. Amigo, this is ridiculous.
But we will know how to do it.
Mike is right, Prof, I put in. Sure, today we haven't a glimmer, but we'll. Mike, did you compute how many years till we have this? Might take a flyer in stocks. Mike answered in sad voice.
Man, my only male friend, save for the professor, whom I hope will be my friend. I tried. I failed. The question is indeterminate.
Why?
Because it involves a breakthrough in theory. There is no way in all my data to predict when and where genius may appear.
Prof sighed. Mike, amigo, I don't know whether to be relieved or disappointed. Then that projection didn't mean anything.
Of course it meant something, said Wyo. It means we'll dig it out when we need it. Tell him, Mike.
Why, oh, I am most sorry. Your assertion is, in effect, exactly what I was looking for. But the answer still remains. Genius is where you find it. No, I am so sorry.
I said, then Prof is right, when comes to placing bets?
One moment, man. There is a special solution suggested by the professor's speech last night. Return shipping, ton for ton.
Yes, but can't do that.
If the cost is low enough, Terrans would do so. That can be achieved with only minor refinement, not a breakthrough. To wit, freight transportation up from Terra as cheap as catapulting down to Terra.
You call this minor?
I call it minor compared with the other problem, man. Mike, dear, how long? When do we get it? Wyo, a rough projection, based on poor data and largely intuitive, would be on the order of 50 years.
50 years? Why, that's nothing. We can have free trade.
Wyo, I said on the order of. I did not say on the close order of.
Oh, it makes a difference?
It does, I told her. What Mike said was that he doesn't expect it sooner than 5 years, but would be surprised if much longer than 500. Eh, Mike?
Correct, man.
So need another projection. Prof pointed out that we ship water and organic matter and don't get it back. Agree, Wyo?
Oh, sure. I just don't think it's urgent. We'll solve it when we reach it.
Okay. Mike, no cheap shipping. No transmutation. How long till trouble?
7 years.
7 years?
Wyo jumped up, stared at phone.
Mike, honey, you don't mean that.
Wyo, he said plaintively. I did my best. The problem has an indeterminately large number of variables. I ran several thousand solutions using many assumptions. The happiest answer came from assuming no increase in tonnage, no increase in lunar population, restriction of births strongly enforced, and a greatly enhanced search for ice in order to maintain the water supply. That gave an answer of slightly over 20 years. All other answers were worse.
Wyo, much sobered, said,
"What happens in 7 years?" The answer of 7 years from now I reached by assuming the present situation, no change in authority policy, and all major variables extrapolated from the empiricals implicit in their past behavior, a conservative answer of highest probability from available data. 2082 is the year I expect food riots. Cannibalism should not occur for at least 2 years thereafter.
Cannibalism?
She turned and buried head against Prof's chest. He patted her, said gently, "I'm sorry, Wyo. People do not realize how precarious our ecology is. Even so, it shocks me. I know water runs downhill, but didn't dream how terribly soon it will reach bottom." She straightened up, and the face was calm.
"Okay, Professor, I was wrong. Embargo, it must be, and all that that implies. Let's get busy. Let's find out from Mike what our chances are. You trust him now, don't you?"
"Yes, dear lady, I do. We must have him on our side. Well, Manuel?" Took time to impress Mike how serious we were, make him understand that jokes could kill us. This, machine who could not know human death. And to get assurance that he could and would protect secrets no matter what retrieval program was used, even our signals, if not from us. Mike was hurt that I could doubt him, but matter too serious to risk slip. Then took 2 hours to program and reprogram and change assumptions and investigate side issues before all four, Mike, Prof, Wyo, Self, were satisfied that we had defined it, i.e., what chance had revolution, this revolution, headed by us, success required before Food Riot Day, against authority with bare hands, against power of all Terra, all 11 billions, to beat us down and inflict their will, all with no rabbits out of hats, with certainty of betrayal
and stupidity and faint-heartedness, and fact that no one of us was genius, nor important in Luna affairs. Prof made sure that Mike knew history, psychology, economics, name it. Torda and Mike was pointing out far more variables than Prof. At last we agreed that programming was done, or that we could think of no other significant factor. Mike then said,
"This is an indeterminate problem. How shall I solve it? Pessimistically or optimistically? Or a range of probabilities expressed as a curve, or several curves? Professor, my friend?"
"Manuel?" I said, "Mike, when I roll a die, it's 1 in 6 it turns ace. I don't ask shopkeeper to float it, nor do I caliper it, nor worry about somebody blowing on it. Don't give happy answer, nor pessimistic. Don't shove curves at us. Just tell in one sentence, what chances? Even? 1 in 1,000? None? Or whatever?"
"Yes, Manuel Garcia O'Kelly, my first male friend."
For 13.5 minutes was no sound, while Wyo chewed knuckles. Never known Mike to take so long. Must have consulted every book he ever read and worn edges off random numbers. Was beginning to believe that he had been overloaded, and either burnt out something or gone into cybernetic breakdown that requires computer equivalent of lobotomy to stop oscillations. Finally he spoke.
"Manuel, my friend, I am terribly sorry."
"What's problem, Mike?"
"I have tried and tried, checked and checked. There is but 1 chance in 7 of winning."
7. I look at Wyo. She looks at me. We laugh. I jump up and yip. "Hooray!" Wyo starts to cry, throws arms around Prof, kisses him. Mike said plaintively,
"I do not understand. The chances are 7 to 1 against us, not for us."
Wyo stopped slobbering Prof and said,
"Hear that? Mike said us. He included himself."
"Of course, Mike old Codber, we understood. But ever know a loony to refuse a bet when he stood a big fat chance of 1 in 7?
"I have known only you 3. Not sufficient data for a curve."
"Well, we're loonies. Loonies bet. Hell, we have to. They shipped us up and bet us we couldn't stay alive. We fooled them. We'll fool them again. Wyo, where's your pouch? Get red hat. Put on Mike. Kiss him. Let's have a drink. 1 for Mike 2. Want a drink, Mike?"
"I wish that I could have a drink,"
Mike answered wistfully.
"As I have wondered about the subjective effect of ethanol on the human nervous system, I conjecture that it must be similar to a slight overvoltage, but since I cannot, please have one in my place."
"Program accepted. Running. Wyo, where's hat?" Phone was flat to wall. Let into rock. No place to hang hat. So, we placed it on writing shelf and toasted Mike and called him comrade. And almost, he cried. His voice fogged up. Then Wyo borrowed Liberty Cap and put it on me and kissed me into conspiracy, officially this time, and so all out that my eldest wife would faint did she see. Then she took hat and put on Prof and gave him same treatment, and I was glad Mike had reported his heart okay. And then she put it on own head and went to phone, leaned close, mouth between binaurals, and made kissing sounds.
"That's for you, Mike, dear comrade. Is Michelle there?"
Blimey if he didn't answer in soprano voice.
"Right here, darling. I am so happy."
So Michelle got a kiss, and I had to explain to Prof who Michelle was and introduce him. He was formal, sucking air and whistling and clasping hands. Sometimes I think Prof was not right in his head. Wyo poured more vodka. Professor Carter mixed ours with coffee, hers with shea, honey and all. "We have declared the revolution," he said firmly. "Now we execute it, with clear heads. Manuel,
You were opted chairman. Shall we begin?
Mike is chairman, I said. Obvious. Secretary, too. We'll never keep anything in writing. First security rule. With Mike, don't need to. Let's battle around and see where we are. I'm new to business.
And, said Prof, still on the subject of security, the secret of Mike should be restricted to this executive cell, subject to unanimous agreement, all three of us. Correction, all four of us. That is, must be extended.
What secret? Asked Wyo. Mike agreed to help our secrets. He's safer than we are. He can't be brainwashed.
Can you be, Mike, dear?
I could be brainwashed, Mike admitted, by enough voltage, or by being smashed, or subjected to solvents, or positive entropy through other means. I find the concept disturbing. But if by brainwashing you mean I could be compelled to surrender our secrets, the answer is an unmodified negative.
I said, why? Prof means secret of Mike himself. Mike, old pal, you're our secret weapon. You know that, don't you?
He answered self-consciously.
It was necessary to take that into consideration in computing the odds.
How were odds without you, comrade? Bad?
They were not good. Not of the same order.
Won't press you. But a secret weapon must be secret. Mike, does anybody else suspect that you are alive?
Am I alive?
His voice held tragic loneliness.
Won't argue semantics. Sure, you're alive.
I was not sure. It is good to be alive. No, Manny, my first friend. You three alone know it. My three friends.
That's how must be if bets to pay off. It's okay? Us three, and never talk to anybody else?
But we'll talk to you lots,
Wyo put in.
It is not only okay, Mike said bluntly. It is necessary. It was a factor in the odds.
That settles it, I said. They have everything else. We have Mike. We keep it that way. Say, Mike, I just had a horrid...
We fight Terra?
We will fight Terra, unless we lose before that time.
Riddle this. Any computer smart as you? Any awake?
He hesitated.
I don't know, man.
No data?
Insufficient data. I have watched for both factors, not only in technical journals, but everywhere else. There are no computers on the market of my present capacity, but one of my model could be augmented just as I have been. Furthermore, an experimental computer of great capacity might be classified and go unreported in the literature.
Chance we have to take.
Yes, man. There aren't any computers as smart as you, Mike,
Wyo said scornfully.
Don't be silly, Manny. Wyo, man was not being silly. Man, I saw one disturbing report. It was claimed that attempts are being made at the University of Peiping to combine computers with human brains to achieve massive capacity. A computing cyborg.
They say how?
The item was non-technical.
Well, won't worry about what can't help. Right, Prof?
Correct, Manuel.
A revolutionist must keep his mind free of worry, or the pressure becomes intolerable.
I don't believe a word of it, Wyo added.
We've got Mike, and we're going to win.
Mike, dear, you say we're going to fight Terra, and Manny says that's one battle we can't win. You have some idea of how we can win, or you wouldn't have given us even one chance in seven. So, what is it?
Throw rocks at them,
Mike answered.
Not funny, I told him. Wyo, don't borrow trouble. Haven't even settled how we leave this puka without being nabbed. Mike, Prof says 9 guards were killed last night, and Wyo says 27 is whole bodyguard, leaving 18. Do you know if that's true? Do you know where they are and what they're up to? Can't put on a revolution if we doesn't stir out.
Prof interrupted. That's a temporary exigency. Manuel, one we can cope with. The point Wyoming raised is basic and should be discussed. And daily, until solved. I am interested in Mike's thoughts.
Okay. Okay.
But will you wait while Mike answers me?
Sorry, sir.
Mike?
Mike? Man, the official number of Warden's bodyguards is 27. If 9 were killed, the official number is now 18.
You keep saying, official number, why?
I have incomplete data which might be relevant. Let me state them before advancing even tentative conclusions. Nominally, the security officer's department, aside from clerks, consists only of the bodyguard. But I handle payrolls for Authority Complex, and 27 is not the number of personnel charged against the security department.
Prof nodded.
Company spies.
Hold it, Prof. Who are these other people?
Mike answered. They are simply account numbers, man. I conjecture that the names they represent are in the security chief's data storage location.
Wait, Mike. Security Chief Alvarez uses you for files?
I conjecture that to be true, since his storage location is under a locked retrieval system.
I said, bloody, and added, Prof, isn't that sweet? He uses Mike to keep records. Mike knows where they are, can't touch them.
Why not, Manuel?
Try to explain to Prof and why all sorts of memory a thinkum has. Permanent memories that can't be erased because patterns be logic itself, how it thinks. Short-term memories used for current programs, and then erased, like memories which tell you whether you have honeyed coffee. Temporary memories held long as necessary. Milliseconds, days, years, but erased when no longer needed. Permanently stored data like a human being's education, but learned perfectly and never forgotten, though maybe condensed, rearranged, relocated, edited. And last but not finally, long lists of special memories ranging from memoranda files through very complex special programs, and each location tagged by on retrieval signal and locked or not, with endless possibilities on locked signals. Sequential, parallel, temporal, situational, others.
Don't explain computers to laymen. Simpler to explain sex to a virgin.
Wyo couldn't see why, if Mike knew where Alvarez kept records, Mike didn't trot over and fetch.
I give up.
Mike, can you explain?
I will try, man. Wyo, there is no way for me to retrieve locked data other than through external programming. I cannot program myself for such retrieval. My logic structure does not permit it. I must receive the signal as an external input.
Well, for Bog's sake, what is this precious signal?
It is, Mike said simply, Special File Zebra.
And waited. Mike, I said, unlock Special File Zebra. He did, and stuff started spilling out. Had to convince Wyo that Mike hadn't been stubborn. He hadn't. He almost begged us to tickle him on that spot. Sure he knew signal, had to, but had to come from outside. That was how he was built.
Mike, remind me to check with you all special-purpose locked retrieval signals. May strike ice other places.
So I conjectured, man.
Okay, we'll get to it later. Now back up and go over this stuff slowly. And Mike, as you read out, store again, without erasing, under Bastille Day, and tag it Fink file. Okay?
Programmed and running.
Do that with anything new he puts in, too. Prime prize was list of names by warrants. Some 200. Each keyed with a code Mike identified with those blind pay accounts. Mike read that Hong Kong Luna list and was hardly started when Wyo gasped,
Stop, Mike! I've got to write these down!
I said, hey, no writing. What's ho-ho?
That woman, Sylvia Chang, is Comrade Secretary back home. But that means the warden has our whole organization.
No, dear Wyoming, Prof corrected. It means we have his organization.
But...
I see what Prof means, I told her. Our organization is just us three and Mike, which Warden doesn't know. But now we know his organization. So shush and let Mike read. But don't write. You have this list from Mike anytime you phone him. Mike, note that Chang Woman is organization secretary, former organization in Kongville.
Noted.
Wyo boiled over as she heard names of undercover finks in her town, but limited herself to noting facts about ones she knew. Not all were comrades, but enough that she stayed riled up. Novy Leningrad names didn't mean much to us. Prof recognized three. Wyo, one. When came Luna City, Prof noted over half as being comrades. I recognized several. Not as fake subversives, but as acquaintances. Not friends. Don't know what it would do to me to find someone I trusted on Boss Fink's payroll. But would shake me. It shook Wyo. When Mike finished, she said,
I've got to get home. Never in my life have I helped eliminate anyone, but I am going to enjoy putting the black on those spies.
Prof said quietly, No one will be eliminated, dear Wyoming.
What? Professor, can't you take it? Though I've never killed anyone, I've always known it might have to be done.
He shook head. Killing is not the way to handle a spy. Not when he doesn't know that you know that he is a spy. She blinked.
I must be dense.
No, dear lady. Instead, you have a charming honesty, a weakness you must guard against.
This book is continued on Disc 4.